This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The World Health Organization warns the Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is spreading to new parts of conflict-ridden North Kivu province, including areas that border Uganda and Rwanda.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have the latest on this story coming up. Also, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres opened the annual General Assembly today with a warning regarding multinational cooperation. Terrorism and bilateral relations topped the agenda when U.S. President Donald Trump met with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt, and Cameroon's Nigerian refugees return to school as Boko Haram worries fade. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. The World Health Organization warns the Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC is spreading to new parts of North Kivu province, including areas that border Uganda and Rwanda. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters.
Attacks by armed opposition groups in North Kivu have increased in severity and frequency in recent weeks. The most recent attack on September 22nd in the city of Beni reportedly killed at least 21 people, including 17 civilians. The World Health Organization sees this attack as especially serious, as Beni is the site for the entire anti-Ebola operation. WHO Health Emergencies Program Chief Peter Salama says increasing insecurity and community mistrust are hurting efforts to prevent the deadly Ebola virus from spreading. He fears the combination of these and other factors could create ideal conditions for an epidemic.
A perfect storm of active conflict limiting our ability to access civilians, distrust by segments of the community already traumatized by decades of conflict and of murder, driven by a fear of a terrifying disease, but also exploited and manipulated by local politicians prior to an election.
North Kivu is an opposition stronghold. Salama says he's very concerned that politicians are using Ebola as a political tool before Congo's December 23rd presidential elections. He says he sees armed opposition groups trying to blame the authorities for the outbreak. WHO reports the number of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola in this outbreak stands at 150, including 100 deaths. Salama says progress that was being made in protecting people against the virus through vaccinations and several experimental drugs is in jeopardy. The Ebola outbreak in North Kivu is the 10th in the DRC since 1976. Salama says this outbreak is the most difficult. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres today opened the annual General Assembly with a warning that the principle of multinational cooperation is under fire precisely when we need it most. He said there are massive threats to people and the planet, and that the way forward requires collective action for the common good. But he also spoke of hopeful signs around the globe.
Just days ago, I witnessed the signing of a historic peace agreement between Ethiopia and Eritrea in Saudi Arabia. Soon after, the presidents of Djibouti and Eritrea met in Jeddah to launch a peace process. Eritrea and Somalia have established diplomatic relations. And in the same region, in the context of a summit of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, the two rival leaders in South Sudan have finally signed a peace agreement. I'm hopeful that these efforts will continue to be consolidated so that the people of the Horn of Africa can finally turn the page on war and conflict.
U.S. President Donald Trump was among the first speakers at the assembly today. His speech stressed U.S. sovereignty and willingness to operate outside the multilateral system. Other speakers today at the U.N. include the leaders of Malawi, Mozambique, and the Gambia. Tomorrow, leaders from South Africa, Liberia, Mali, and Zimbabwe are among the speakers. Well, today's computer and satellite technologies generate data on an unprecedented scale, but accessing and interpreting all that information can be an overwhelming challenge for governments when creating policies to meet the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on one organization that is helping to make these oceans of data available and useful.
The Global Partnership for Sustainable Development Data has huge ambitions in countries across Africa. Claire Malamud is the group's chief executive officer.
We're all about helping governments and civil society organizations and companies use the best data that there is in the world to help them to make the right decisions to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals, to reduce hunger, to improve people's health, education, all the things that governments want for their people.
Malamud says the global partnership does not generate data. It collects it from universities, nonprofit groups, companies, and government agencies like NASA, America's Space Agency, and makes it available to help achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals. One focus is environmental data. There is now a way for African governments to look at 17 years of satellite imagery of their countries.
So governments can use that to understand what's been happening to their water resources, to their soil, to their forests, to the way that people are using the land, and use that to make better decisions for the people that live on that land.
Promoting women's health is another area where accurate data is essential. Malamud says governments often address maternal mortality based on mathematical models.
Doesn't mean they're wrong. It means they're estimates, and they're normally quite decent estimates. But what that doesn't tell you is what's happening to women in a particular clinic or a particular part of the country or in a particular age group. And that's the information that governments need or donors need or charities need to actually do something about it.
And that means collecting information at the grassroots level. For example, there must be a rigorous system for recording maternal deaths.
So you need to know every person that dies, what they died from, where they died, and then you can start to properly understand the kind of granular nature of the problem and really start to tackle it.
And that's where you come in.
Absolutely. One of the things that, of course, runs across all of the goals is the challenge to leave no one behind. And in data, as in life, the very poorest people tend to be the most invisible, the least represented, the least powerful. And so that's something that we have a big focus on.
As the chief executive officer of the Global Partnership for Sustainable Development Data, Claire Malamud encourages her partners to remember that every data set contains countless human stories. And, she says, while getting the data can be hard, like all the hardest jobs, it's certainly worth doing. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Terrorism and bilateral relations topped the agenda when U.S. President Donald Trump met with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt yesterday in New York. Trump praised his Egyptian counterpart for being at the forefront of fighting terrorism. Reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi has the story.
Ahead of today's opening of the United Nations General Assembly's annual meeting of world leaders, President Trump met with Egyptian President Sisi, describing him as a good friend from a country that has been a close ally to the U.S.
Our relationship has never been stronger, and we're working with Egypt on many different fronts, including military and trade and whatever else you can work, we'll work.
President Trump praised the Egyptian president for what he described as outstanding job with respect to terrorism. Trump took the opportunity to spotlight his own success in fighting terrorism.
We've done very well. If you look at various parts of the Middle East, you look at Syria, we've wiped out ISIS. We're in the very final throes.
President Trump promised President Sisi to work with him in combating terrorism. The Egyptian president congratulated President Trump on his achievements and emphasized the strong ties between Egypt and the United States. Sisi says that his meeting speaks volumes of the magnitude of the relationship over 40 years now. And he says during Trump's term, the relationship has seen even more support. A few days before the meeting, the State Department approved the sale of about $100 million worth of tank ammunition to improve Egypt's capabilities against militants affiliated with ISIS in the Sinai. Sarah Lee Whitson is the Executive Director of Middle East and North Africa Division at Human Rights Watch. She says the meeting did not include discussion of Egypt's human rights record, even though the United States Congress has expressed deep concern over this issue. This, in part, she says, is because of the Trump administration's concerns for Israel's security, but also because of the U.S. president's personal diplomatic style.
Trump's vision of security attaches itself to the most extreme oppressive rulers, that this kind of a strongman approach to suppression and oppression is tied to security.
However, the State Department has said the United States has privately relayed its concerns to the Egyptian government, urging it to show more improvement on its human rights record. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. UN General Secretary Antonio Guterres opened the annual General Assembly today with a warning that the principle of multinational cooperation is under fire precisely when we need it most. The WHO warns the Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC is spreading, and terrorism and bilateral relations topped the agenda when U.S. President Donald Trump met with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt yesterday in New York. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Nigerian refugee children have returned to schools on Cameroon's northern border as the threat of attacks from Boko Haram Islamist militants has reduced. But as Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the Manawa refugee camp, some feel it is still not safe enough to return home.
On a bright Monday morning at the government primary school in the Manawa refugee camp, thousands of children gather for their morning assembly. They pray and listen to news about their school, the camp, their host country Cameroon, and the country of origin Nigeria. They are among some 75,000 Nigerians, most of them women and children, who fled Boko Haram Islamists to live along Cameroon's northern border. But even inside the refugee camp, the fear of Boko Haram attacks kept school enrollment last year to around 10,000 children. Many students were too traumatized to study, while security forces also worried the militants could infiltrate the schools. In the last year, Boko Haram attacks have drastically reduced. And since the school year began on September 3, the children at the camp's school has nearly doubled to 20,000. Teacher Lawrence Nyamjo says with only 190 teachers, they are now more concerned about resources than suicide bombers.
Problem of teachers, infrastructure, even school kits for children, since they ran down by the ICR, provide everything for them.
Nyamjo says they are waiting for the United Nations Refugee Agency to help provide school supplies. The United Nations Children's Fund representative in Cameroon, Jacques Bower, visited the refugee camp schools along with the Korean ambassador. He says they noticed a positive change in the children.
4 months before, I was in the same place. These children were sad, traumatized. What we have witnessed with Excellency the ambassador of Korea, it smiles on their faces. Children 4 months ago were drawing people with weapons on drawings. Now they are drawing flowers, houses. So for us, it's important on the psychological aspect that this change occur.
The Boko Haram conflict has displaced about 200,000 people in northern Cameroon. But while there has been no major Boko Haram attack in the past year, only about 8,000 Nigerian refugees have felt safe enough to return home. 11-year-old Nigerian student Emma Hamadu fled from the Nigerian town of Banki 3 years ago after Boko Haram fighters torched the houses, markets, and schools. She says when it is safe, she dreams of returning to her country to teach friends that Boko Haram's opposition to Western education is wrong.
I am in group 5. I come here for learning. When I finish my school, I want to be a teacher.
Cameroon on September 3rd reopened 40 schools on its northern border with Nigeria that were sealed for 4 years because of Boko Haram threats. While the Central African State says the Islamist threat has drastically reduced, it warns people should remain vigilant and report any suspects. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Minawau, Northern Cameroon.
Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and two top U.S. officials have accepted an award for their work to advance democracy around the world. VOA's Ayan Bior reports from the awards ceremony in Washington, D.C.
A celebration of democracy was on full display at the International Foundation for Electoral Systems Awards Dinner as recipients of the award highlighted Africa's progress. U.S. Senator Chris Coons had kind words about the continent's future.
And I'll tell you, it is, I believe, from the nation of Africa that leaders will rise and have risen, who will challenge us to prove to the world that we mean what we say, that we have not broken faith with the pledges we made more than two centuries ago in the small town of Philadelphia, so near my hometown, that we will stand and fight for our democracy at home and everywhere in the world.
Senator Coons was one of three recipients of the Charles T. Manatt Democracy Awards, which is presented by IFES to one Republican, one Democrat, and a member of the international community each year. Recipients are recognized for their work to advance democracy around the world. Award recipient Mark Green seized the opportunity to deliver choice words to leaders who use fear and intimidation to detract from democratic ideals.
Those anti-democratic tactics that I've described aren't signs of strength. They're proof of weakness. The authoritarians are not motivated by courage. They are driven by fear.
But it was international recipient Ellen Johnson Sirleaf who commanded the room's attention.
If Africa is to prosper, and that the only way to succeed is to make the institutions stronger than the individuals.
The former head of state accepted the awards as news of missing banknotes dominate the headlines in her native Liberia. The government is investigating the loss of newly printed banknotes worth more than $100 million. Liberia's Ministry of Justice says the money was ordered by Sirleaf's administration and arrived before she left office. Sirleaf has since demanded an investigation and has denied accusations of wrongdoing. Sirleaf, the first elected female head of state in Africa, has endured her share of criticism during her tenure as president, with her opponents accusing her of corruption and nepotism. Helen Cooper, journalist and author and attendee of the awards dinner, says the criticism is part of the job.
You're never going to have any president who's going to rule for 12 years and come out of it without critics. And I think the fact that you see so much criticism is also, it's both a good thing because she's allowed these institutions in Liberia to flourish. There's been incredible freedom of the press. There's freedom of speech. Liberians now feel that they're not going to be thrown into jail for criticizing their leaders. And I think that says a lot.
Freedom House says there is now a global decline in political rights, the lowest in more than a decade. IFES is working around the world to strengthen democracies. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
This year's winner of the UN Refugee Agency's prestigious Nansen Award is South Sudanese surgeon Evan Attar Adha. He is being honored for 2 decades of life-saving medical work on behalf of thousands of refugees and internally displaced. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Evan Attar Adha gave up a relatively comfortable life as a surgeon in Egypt to dedicate the past 20 years to helping thousands of people victimized by war and persecution in Sudan and South Sudan. His services have never been more in demand, as South Sudan's civil war, which is in its 5th year, has forced nearly 4.4 million people to flee their homes as refugees or internally displaced. He runs the only functional hospital in northeastern South Sudan, serving Bunj, a town of more than 200,000 people. Attar says he treats everyone, regardless of who they are. He adds he is most happy when his work has saved somebody from suffering or has saved his life. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh tells VOA that Attar's hospital is surrounded by an active conflict zone. He says the doctor works under very difficult and dangerous conditions, providing medical services to a desperate population.
The only line of defense he has is his reputation and his humanitarian work. Luckily, so far, his work has been respected by all sides. His clinic is open for all sides, whoever needs his assistance.
According to Balosh, Attar's team carries out an average of 58 operations per week in difficult conditions with limited supplies and equipment. He says the doctor is on call at all hours and is known to sleep only 1 hour a day on occasion. He says Attar's personal sacrifice to his mission is huge. He says the South Sudanese surgeon lives in a canvas tent near the hospital and visits his family in Nairobi, Kenya, 3 times a year. The Nansen Award is named after Norwegian explorer, scientist, diplomat, humanitarian, and Nobel Peace Laureate Fridtjof Nansen. It recognizes individuals who go beyond the call of duty in pursuit of humanitarian work. The award includes a commemorative medal and a $150,000 prize. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. And thanks for choosing the VOA.
I'm Lenor Moudou, host of Health Chat. On September 26, the United Nations will hold a high-level meeting on tuberculosis with the goal to end the global TB epidemic by 2030. Join us this Tuesday as we discuss the significance of the upcoming UN meeting and look at the global fight against TB. Our guest is Gavin Churchyard, CEO of the Orom Institute in South Africa. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the 2018 UN General Assembly. The theme of this year's debate, making the UN relevant to all people. Discussing the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.